Welcome to Think Like a CEO, where we discuss business, life, and leadership lessons with Gary Keller, CEO and Chairman of Keller Williams Realty. I'm your host, Jay Papasan, and welcome to our first episode. Today, we're going to discuss with Gary how he made the transition from aspiring rock musician to realtor, despite not fitting the traditional mold. All right, Gary, I want to start this off with hearing a little bit about your journey.
All right.
I'm familiar. We've gotten to work with each other for now almost 18 years.
Absolutely.
But a lot of people haven't heard your story. Almost 18 years.
Good Lord.
I know. It's
you
crazy, isn't it? I know. We've both added a few gray hairs. I'm feeling it today.
Nah.
You got into business in 1979.
1979.
Let's talk a little bit about you're getting into business and you got into leadership within like a year of getting into business.
Yeah, so, a year and a half. So I wasn't going to college, Jay. I thought I was going to be a rock musician. And no, it's true.
Yep.
And I never thought about past music. And I had an interesting, experience when I graduated from high school. I kept playing in bands and our band played one night and it didn't go great. And I came home that night. My parents, who were both educators, were sitting on the couch waiting for me, parents, right? And I came in, and I sat down, and they said, how'd it go? And I said, I don't think it's going to work out. I'm not that talented, and I'm not that motivated to practice enough to overcome the lack of talent. Mm. And, which is kind of a revelation when I said it. And my parents, I think, kind of understood that. And they said, well, actually, we applied to a college, and you've been accepted if you want to go. And I went, really? Where was that? And they said, Baylor. And actually didn't know where that was. Even though I had an older sister who was there, I didn't know. I hadn't paid attention. I said, cool. So I ended up going to Baylor. And I fell in love with education. At the end of my sophomore year, my dad said, you might want to get a major. I hadn't thought about it. And
can I just say, having known you for this long, the idea, one, picturing you, because you had long hair and a Fu Manchu at this moment, right?
I did.
This was a period of
curly
time.
Curly hair and a Fu Manchu.
There we go. And the idea that the Gary I've worked with all these years didn't have a plan B.
I had no plan.
I
didn't even think about it. And I, when I teach the kids in our course called Quantum Leap, when I teach the kids, I tell this story in a variety of ways, but I try to make the point that I want you to hear how completely lack of vision and focus and any sort of a sense of what life could hold, because later I'm going to act like I know what I'm talking about.
Right.
And I want you to, if you're having that sense of, I don't know where I'm going yet, maybe take heart. So my dad at the end of my sophomore year goes, hey, you need a major.
Right.
And I thought about it. And so he did a really cool parental thing. He set up a day for me to spend with a lawyer, an accountant, a banker, and a realtor. And I really liked the realtor, very entrepreneurial. It was a business, right? The guy was running a business. The rest were not running a business. And that really appealed to me. I went back to Baylor, and it turns out that year, they were starting a real estate degree program, real estate / insurance.
There you go.
So I got my degree in real estate, in insurance. One of the interesting things about my life, and this is that I've never worked for anybody that wasn't a millionaire. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize at the time that actually was happening, but I later looked back. And so even during that school year, I worked for the head of the department who was actually an entrepreneur, a very wealthy entrepreneur that actually was starting the program, Dr. Wolstein Smith. So I now graduate with a degree in real estate, but in college, again, in the late 70s, I'm coming out of the marketing department, and there, even though it's a real estate degree, they still were teaching us how to interview and ask for money. And
right.
My first interview, I only went on two because they came to the campus and I went to Fort Worth. And at the end of the interview, the guy says, well, how much money would you like to make? And I'd been taught in the marketing department that companies like Procter & Gamble back in those days were paying people with a marketing degree $18,000 a year. So I said, I want to make $18,000 a year. I thought we were negotiating salary. And the guy says, well, he stands up and he says, well, I hope you make it. Sticks out his hand. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, this is a 100% commission job. And I went, what? He said, yeah, actually, you're going to need $1,000 to get in the business, right? To set yourself up and have a couple of months of cash flow before you start earning money. And I remember driving back in this little yellow Volkswagen Beetle that I had inherited from an aunt. and got to the edge of the Baylor campus where I lived, walked right through the living room, went right to the landline, dialed my parents' phone. And when my dad picked it up and said, "Hey, Dad, you know, how's it going?" No, I said, "Do you realize I have a degree that pays no money?" And my dad was kind of stunned because I don't think he thought about it. He had aimed me in a direction and knew people that made money in real estate. I don't think he thought about the fact that they don't pay you any money to do that. You have to go make the money. So anyway, my dad ended up giving me $1,000. He basically had said, "Hey, your sister ended up having a nose job, and here's what we spent. And so you can either have your nose done or you get the money." And so
this is your seed money to start your real estate business.
Funny thing is that my sister's actually really pretty and she has the best nose in the family. And I got this and $1,000, right? Yeah. So I interviewed with another company, made the decision to join that firm and rented an apartment, drove back, graduated, got there late in the afternoon. And the people I had rented from weren't answering the phone or whatever. And I didn't even know where I was living. And so I slept in the car the next day. I woke up, they came to the office. I said, "Where do I live?" They showed me, and there we go. Went to a 2-week training program and launched my career. Long story short, I sold 6 houses my first month in the business. Got my picture in the paper, 5 of them closed. And the next 5 months, I closed nothing. I mean, I went broke. And the economy had changed. Interest rates were now going to 18%, and it was really a hard time. And I sold homes, but nothing closed. Anyway, I went home at Christmas. I was broke. I told my parents I'm broke. My mom says, "Well, maybe you should get a job at 7-Eleven." And I looked at my mother. I said, "You know, people are getting shot at 7-Eleven in the late 70s, Mother." And I said, "But I'm not going to do that. If I'm going to get out, I'm going to get out on my terms." And my dad said, "Well, how do we know you've been working?" And I thought it was a great question. I mean, even now I go, "Wow, that's a great question. I'm an independent contractor. I don't get paid any money. I'm not employed, if you will, as an employee. Where's the proof that I even get out of bed?"
Right.
So I went back to my car and got my card file box and my calendar. And I showed my dad my work schedule out of my calendar, and then I showed him my database. I showed him my A through Z cards, which was my Rolodex, if you will, so if I needed to send out newsletters or find someone. And then I had my January through February cards, which were the next time I should contact this individual when they might do business with me. And I showed Dad that, and I pulled out the cards and said, "Well, this is how many leads I have that could come to fruition in January. It's how many I have in February." And Dad looked at that, and he said, "Okay, I'll bet $500 against that box." So he gave me $500. And that kind of, I got a phone call the very next day. It was on Christmas Eve. And it was Jack and Dorothy Saul had sold their home in St. Louis. And I had met them at a fraternity party that summer. Not met them, but met their future son-in-law, who was a fraternity brother, and said, "Hey, my future parent-laws are moving to Austin. You might want to call them." And I had stayed in contact with them. Their home had sold, and they want to see houses the day after Christmas. So I spent Christmas Day with my family, went back that night, did the prep work. The next day, sold them a home, and went on to be the runner-up of the Rookie of the Year in the large real estate company in the city. And the only reason I wasn't the Rookie of the Year is because I took the last month off because I hit all my goals.
That's right. And you bought like a great stereo, which was one of your goals, if I remember correctly.
I did. I bought two Sherwin Vega Tower speakers. They were awesome. Got a condo, got a new Honda four-door beige Accord, and got a dog.
Moving all up. I love it. One of the things I want to get back, you had a degree in real estate and insurance. And correct me if I'm wrong, you applied to possibly work in insurance and they gave you a test and said you wouldn't be any good at sales. Does that ring a bell?
Yeah. So yes, my degree was in real estate / insurance. And the insurance company came and interviewed. So I interviewed with them. And it was New York Life, actually. And in the interview, I went to their office. At the interview, they gave me a behavioral profile. And I took it, not even knowing what that was, really. And I think a week or so later, J.I. got a almost felt like a form letter, but essentially said, "Hey, you don't match the profile of our top salespeople. You should choose another career."
I just think that's so funny. I mean, I think sometimes we have this idea of what a sales leader or whatever looks like.
Yep.
Clearly, you didn't match the traditional mold.
No.
And imagine if you'd gone into insurance instead. Like, what would the world look like? That's well, what
well, I would have the largest insurance company in the world.
New York Life would be in a better spot.
Yeah, the thing is, I think Daniel Pink kind of nailed it, you know, in recent times when he pointed out that your best salespeople are not the people with the gift of gab.
That's right.
That just because you can talk a blue streak doesn't mean you actually can sell. That selling is helping people, and that your best salespeople are more educators, they're more informers, that they understand their rules to help people make great decisions. And I have that behavioral profile, not the sales profile.
That's been one of your strengths as a real estate salesperson. You help people make great decisions. As a real estate leader, I'd love to have you share that story. You made your stand around helping people make great decisions. You became a teacher, a coach, and a trainer. Yeah. And that became one of your core skills.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're in sales and in any business situation, just forget sales. Your goal at the end of the day is to help people make a good decision, right? If it's to buy a product or not buy it, mm-hmm. your job is to help them make that decision. Don't get caught up in whether they say yes or no. Help them make a great decision. And you'll have a customer for life, whether they buy today or not. They're going to refer people to you, whatever. If you employ people, or if you're hiring someone, let's back up, then your goal is to help them make a good decision of whether they should work there or not. Mm-hmm. And if they do end up working there, then your goal is to help them make a good decision about what their goals should be, what their plans should be, and how they organize their time to accomplish that. So it doesn't matter what role you're playing at the end of the day. Life is really a series of decision-making moments. And if you learn to make great decisions, you're going to have better moments.
Love that. All right, so you're runner-up to Rookie of the Year. How did you make the leap into leadership?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I found myself, because of my background, I was just helping agents. I was helping real estate agents. And I look back now and I go, boy, that's kind of presumptuous of me that I would say, hey man, can I help you? You look like you're struggling. But I was doing that, right? So when they announced that they were going to open some new offices, I just applied and said, wow, that could be fun. I'd like to do that. And they actually turned me down and said they wouldn't hire me.
Okay. What did you do?
Well, I said, give me a test. What the owner said was, nobody likes you.
Uh-huh.
And he wasn't trying to be rude. He just said, well, actually, you're not popular, right? And I said, yes, I kind of understand that. And that is that when I go to the office and, you know, the receptionist is doing her nails, I would ask her to stop because I have clients coming in. And silly me, I thought the office was supposed to be a productive environment that supported my goals. And so that kind of behavior didn't make me popular. And I told him, I said, I understand why that occurs, but please know if you hire me, they'll like me and they'll make more money. And he said, I'm not going to hire you. And I don't know why I said it, but when he said that, it kind of struck my competitive mm-hmm. nature. And I said, well, give me a test. And if I pass it, you have to hire me. And I don't think anybody ever talked to this guy this way. I mean, he was very wealthy. He was, I think, 29, 30 years old and was the number one real estate company in the city at the time. And a great guy and very successful. And I wasn't being rude. I just said, give me a test.
Right.
So he actually wrote down some things I had to go do and handed it to me. And I think he assumed I would just go away.
Right.
And I went out, accomplished all of them, came back and laid it on his desk and said, I've done those things. Now you have to hire me. Well, he'd already promised what was considered the cherry location, rented space, hired a manager. And he said, we're going to send you over here to another actually called Round Rock. And at the time in the early 80s, that was like goat pasture. There's nothing right there. And here's the funny thing. I went on to build a very successful business for him that is still there today. And here we are, right, 2019. That other location, they didn't even last 1 year and he had to pay the rest of the lease for the remaining years. He just had to write checks to it. They never succeeded. They never went back. It never worked out.
Now, when you were building this office, this is a story that you have heard you tell about how you literally went door knocking for talent?
Yeah. Well, if you're going to build a business and again, if you think about real estate and you're going to build a business around a geographic area,
right,
then we need people that live in that area that want to sell real estate. So the easiest way to do that is just go door to door saying, hey, I hope I didn't catch you a bad time. The reason I'm here is to see if you know of anybody who ever think about getting real estate. Right. And they would kind of look at me. I say, well, you know, the or why or whatever. And my follow-up line was something to the effect of, well, we represent the we want to represent the homeowners and the potential buyers in this area, and the people that know the area the best tend to make the best salespeople. And so I'm out here in the neighborhood to see if anyone in this area wants to represent people buying and selling in this area.
I love that story. People who don't know real estate don't know how few real estate professionals will do the hard work, literally the shoe leather of going door to door to get business. And you were doing that not to necessarily get listings, but to get people to take listings.
Right, absolutely. I was saying, look, if we're gonna build a successful business in this area, then why don't we start with people that live in the area and see if anybody wants to go into business?
Love it. So you're a leader. Now, the next big step in my sense of your history is you make the leap from being a leader in someone else's business to launching Keller Williams. How did that happen?
To launching Keller Williams?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I accomplished that goal. We built a very successful business. Ultimately, the owner of that firm did a few things that kind of set the business back. And I didn't appreciate it. So I went in and quit. And I said, I'm not going to work here. And he said, how much money would it take to keep you? Well, now, that's a big difference than, hey, I'm not going to hire you.
Right.
And I said, well, you don't pay people that much money. And he kind of said, well, don't tell me, you know, what would the number be? So I wrote a number on a sheet of paper. I slid it across and he said, okay. So I said, okay, well, I'm you promised to get me out. You never did, right? So, okay, I'll do this. I'll go back and rebuild what was torn down. But after that, I'm out of here, right? And then he said, of course, how much money would it take to keep you? And so he said, okay, go back. And then after you do that, you'll go open additional businesses for us. So
right.
My job was the vice president of expansion, to go expand the business. So that's what I did. And so after I did that, I went and started another location. That was going great. And then out of the blue, he called me up and that conversation didn't go well. I didn't appreciate being talked to that way. And he had done that a number of times and I was kind of done with it. So again, there was no support. My office was a broom closet. I know that because there was a broom in there and there was a mop in there. And I had a folding table and a folding chair and another folding table as a credenza. I had a flip chart and a telephone, and that was my office. And I achieved basically the goals that had been set. I went and I resigned, turned over all the files, all the people that were be joining the business. And I walked out. And I didn't know what I was going to do at the time, Jay, to be honest with you. I didn't know.
One of the lessons I got from that, I've heard you tell that story before, and you characterized it, is that that was a leader that thought everybody should work for him. And you said, I feel like we're working for them instead.
Yeah,
well, I feel like that's informed a lot of your leadership decisions.
It still does today. I mean, I told him, I said, "You." What I said was respectfully. I didn't say it disrespectfully, but he said, well, you know, what's wrong or whatever? And I said, well, you think everybody works for you. And I disagree with that. I think that a company should work for people. And so I got to quit.
There you go.
Well, because I'm recruiting people into an organization representing the way I believe, only for them to get into a company that doesn't believe that and doesn't act that way operationally. And so there was a conflict. So I needed to move on. Respectfully, I needed to move on.
So you handed over all the work you'd done,
yep.
Right?
Walked out.
You started Keller Williams.
Yeah. So there was a great guy. His name was Joe Williams. He had been a trainer for the organization that I was in, and it was in the commercial real estate business. So I approached him and I said, "Hey, let's form a company." We ultimately decided on. I suggested we call it Williams and Keller, and he said, "No, Keller Williams is a better name." So Joe named the company. And we had two companies. We had Keller Williams Realtors, which was residential, and that's the company that I started. We had Keller Williams Commercial, and that was the company that Joe started. And we were equal partners in both businesses.
And I think if I heard you say it different times, you started the money. It was really a cash flow business right off the bat. But didn't you borrow maybe $60,000 to launch the whole thing? I was trying to think, you look at the company today and say, what did this start with?
44,000. So we borrowed 44,000. And it was interesting because we couldn't get anyone to loan us the money. And I still remember there was a lending business over on 6th Street. And we went into the house and it was a young man who was running, I think it was his father's company. And he wouldn't give us the money, but he made a statement. He said, "Don't you think you guys were successful because you were with the number one real estate company?" And you know, I hadn't thought about that, Jay, not at all. But when he made that statement, and I can be kind of a smart aleck, I admit that. And when he said that, I just shot back and said, "No, actually, he was number one because people like us were there and we're not there. And, you know, 5 years later, we were number one.
Tell me about there's the story.
I didn't own the money. I ultimately ended up getting a group of Aggies. I'm in Austin, right? So we don't necessarily, you know, Longhorns and Aggies can tussle, right? But they were great. These businessmen were great. They understood it. They said, we're not going to let you buy new stuff. We're going to only let you buy used stuff since the dollars had already been knocked off, right?
Right.
So that if we have to, you fail, the value is still in what we loaned you. I thought that was really smart.
Yeah.
And so we had to go get all used stuff.
Is that red couch that's in your office today? Is that one of your original purchases for the office?
It is. Actually, Joe Williams had gone to a garage sale, and that couch and those two chairs were there. And Joe paid $1,000 for those and came back and said he really liked the man that sold them to him. And so I went back and recruited Layman Tedford to the company.
There we go.
And yes, and that couch and two chairs were purchased in 1983.
So you started on a shoestring budget. You had to go back.
Oh, by the way, here's the secret.
Yeah.
If you get tufted leather, you always have to fix it and replace it. But if you get smooth, tight leather, you don't.
There we go.
Yeah,
that's why they're still around.
Don't get the tufted chairs. Don't get the tufted couch. Always get the smooth leather.
I love it.
Yeah.
So your first two recruits, you've told the story of them coming out of the audience. You were teaching a class.
Well, it was a crazy experience. And that was, I had turned all these names over to the firm and said, I'll never call them again. You paid me to recruit them. It would be unethical for me to turn around and, now that I'm leaving, if whatever I do, go back and recruit them back. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I knew I'd be in real estate management somewhere. And so I never contacted these people. And so I was one of the top trainers in the city at the community college, at the real estate schools. And so I happened to kind of hit pay dirt, and I was teaching at the community college. And so this, let's back up for a second, just as an interesting note, and that is, when that young man said, how do you know you'll be successful? Right? I said, well, we're not there anymore. So then he said, well, how do you know you'll be successful on your own? Mm-hmm. And this the guy that we were asking for to give us money. And I actually told him the story. I said, well, look, I keep records. And for every 20 people I teach in the city, someone either comes up out of the audience or out of the class, or they contact me later and they ask me what they should do about their career. And so I have about a 1-to-20 ratio. So if I get in front of a room of 20 people, I'm now going to recruit them to our firm. And that's been my track record. And he didn't buy into it. He thought that, well, that was fine, but you were doing this for the top firm in the city. What he didn't realize was that actually wasn't the issue at all.
Right.
So anyway, so back to your question. So I find myself luckily in an auditorium with 100-and-something people in the audience, 160 or so people in the audience. And I'm on a panel. And at the end of it, actually three people came up. But the two of them that are famous are Gary Gentry and Alvy Osborne came up and said, oh, so this is what happened to you.
Yeah.
And turns out that they were in the files that I'd given, and the firm, the person who replaced me, had never called any of those people.
Wow.
One of them went on to be the Rookie of the Year for the Austin Board of Realtors. It wasn't just anybody. And the two other people that you're mentioning, Gary and Althea, turned out to be two of the most amazing real estate professionals to ever enter the industry.
Still with you,
yeah,
and still icons.
We're still in business together, and they are icons of the real estate industry. I mean, they're amazing.
So I want to just kind of wrap up this first episode. How long did it take you to become profitable? You started it. You got a shoestring budget. You've got used furniture.
Well, we've never, Keller Williams, as a businessman, I've never had a year where I didn't make money. I've always been profitable.
So the first year, Keller Williams became profitable.
$102,000 net profit.
Love it. On $44,000 investment.
Well, we paid them back.
And made 102.
Yeah, paid That's them great. Back and never, no, we made the 102 and then paid them back.
Got it.
But we never borrowed money again to operate the company. We never took any outside money in. We figured out how to go build the company from cash flow instead of outside investment.
Which, knowing you, it's a theme that'll come up in these conversations. Lead with revenue, right? It's something you learned early and you've kept to it.
Just lead with revenue.
So
baby.
If you could go back, you're right here. You're launching this with Joe, this new enterprise that we now know it became. Knowing what you know now, what would be the one piece of advice that you would have given yourself right then, that first year?
Well, Okay.
A tough question, I know.
Yeah, I'm going to kind of think about the nuance of that question. I was blessed. One of the things that was really cool was that this was the third business I was starting.
Hmm.
And
because you'd already launched those other offices.
That's correct. That's exactly right. And so I didn't really think about it that much until later I looked back and I saw other people that I was coaching or helping launch their sales career or launch a real estate business or other businesses, right? And I realized in that moment that a couple of things. Number one is I'd never worked for anybody that wasn't a millionaire.
Right.
Going all the way back to when I was 14 years old and working for Mr. Jackson in his landscape business, everyone I'd reported to, Jay.
You just saw the habits of millionaires and you didn't know what you were seeing.
That's exactly right. I had developed a mindset simply by observing how all of these individuals had behaved during my life, right? And then the second advantage I had going for me was this wasn't my first rodeo. I knew the operating costs. I knew how to set that business up. I knew how that business made money. And so doing that wasn't complicated for me. That was so then again, you say, what would I do different?
Or what advice would you give yourself? Because I'm thinking there's a lot of people listening to this that are launching their own businesses. They're in that spot of it's exciting and a little scary at the same time.
Okay. I'll tell you a piece of advice. And that is when you incorporate, make sure your spouse has another attorney other than yours. Because after one year in business,
right.
Literally in February, right? Early February, I came home one night to my wife of just a couple of years. And it turned out that she didn't love me. She never loved me, she said. Let's just leave it at that. And I walked out of the house that night going, I don't know what I'm going to do. And the locks were changed. And we never really spoke again. The way I've described that is I felt like I had been hopping, you know, about 7 feet high and had fallen in a 10-foot hole. And I'd been building my life kind of organically, meaning that I had this 5-year, 10-year, 15-year, 20-year kind of view organically of how things were just going to evolve. And I was just kind of taking my life through those stages. And because we had both used the same attorney in the divorce discussions, my attorney told me, you've got a problem. I said, well, what's that? He said, well, and this happens a lot, Gary, but the judge is going to say, well, Mr. Keller, who represented you in drawing up this buy-sell agreement, this contract, right, in case there's divorce, what happens? And I would say, well, my attorney did. And he said, the judges are going to ask, well, who represented your wife? I'm going to say, well, my attorney did. And then he's going to throw that out. This is not, they're already telling you, the other side's already telling you this isn't going to work. So you don't have a buy-sell agreement. So the buy-sell agreement would have had me paying money that I could have easily handled. Without that, they started at $1 million. But anyway, so you asked me the one thing I would have done different if you're starting a business today is I know it sounds horrible, but you should, if you're married, you should have a separate lawyer so for you and your spouse so that everyone has true legal representation.
Wow. All right. So to kind of wrap things up, you've launched the business. You've got now this new challenge. You've got a divorce. You've got a divorce settlement.
Yep.
And we'll probably pick that up in the second episode. And that to me, the challenges that you face with the market and that and how you had to learn to jump higher are really what I think is the birthplace of the systems that you've built the company on.
Look forward to it.
Cool. Well, that's a wrap. We hope you enjoyed the show. Make sure and click the subscribe button so new episodes will automatically be downloaded to your device. Also, please help us reach more people by leaving a rating or a review on your podcast player of choice. Next time on Think Like a CEO, Gary and I will talk about how he rose from a personal and professional low to create Keller Williams Realty.